The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Little John. On this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week, I have a special, I don't want to say special guest, because you're not really a guest. You're
I'm on
the
more
show
often,
often
now. Yeah,
you're coming on. So,
Justin Brueggemann.
Justin's in studio today. He's one of the, are part of our advisor core. If you have not kind of heard the story, you know, Little John Financial is this local to, we're headquartered in Roseburg, Oregon. We have actually clients literally in multiple countries.
And, yeah.
I don't know if we have every time zone in the United States currently. We have at one point or another. I think we had some clients in Hawaii that moved.
Oh, that's right.
And so I think that changed it. But we've got all the other time zones, and we've got them around the globe these days because we have some folks that are expats. But anyway, the unique thing about our practice is that we operate as a team. So if you are a customer of mine, you're a customer of Justin's, or vice versa. So we like that. But anyway, Justin, thanks for joining me today.
Of course.
You know, we do this every time that we kind of have these shows, and we chuckle about it. You know, where do you come up with ideas? And it comes from all over the place, right? We get them from each other, like just to brainstorm. We get them from our clients.
Yeah.
We get them from our family sometimes. Right. That's more common than you think. Like when our own family member is like, hey, what about this? And you're like, that's a good topic. Sometimes we get it from headlines, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that's newsworthy in the world. And, you know, sometimes we get it from random places. Sometimes we do experiments. We like to play with AI these days. It's a new and emerging trend. So we'll test AI and come up with that. And it's funny because we had an idea. I kind of had this idea, and Justin was like, all right, I'll go along for the ride. Well, tell me what to do, which is, thanks, Justin.
That's what I'm here for. And then, as of normal, curveballs.
Yeah. But I did say, look, I'll give a little prep work here, okay? And so we started to ask the question, what is the number one financial problem that – and it really started out that the different generations deal with.
Right.
Right. And so we're going to break that down a little bit. But it turns out it's kind of fun. Right. If you want to run an experiment with this, then you like get on to an AI system. Like we tried ChatGPT, which was novel. And I just asked it. At first, I said for Gen X, then Gen Y, and then Gen Z. And then just for being hilarious, I said, how about for Congress? Right. And it's says, oh, well, you know, it's trying to balance budgets and so forth. They said, well, what about for Oregon? And it's like affordable housing. And I thought, okay, well, we're going somewhere with this. I said, well, what about for community colleges? Because I'm on the board here at UCC. And it's like, oh, you know, it's related to rising costs and labor and so forth and all the other things. Well, what about hospitals? Because that's a big employer here. And they're like, oh, also, you know, it's hard because of rising costs and staffing. So what about for our county commissioners? And just said, budgeting. And
just
like
money.
And it just kind of says, like, yeah, money, right? It's just like, that's the problem with all government officials, money. And I thought, do you think we have an income problem or a spending problem?
I think it's both.
Yeah, the answer 100% is
100%
yes.
Both. Yeah.
Here's the challenge, right? This question for all of you guys listening, anybody that picks this show up later on our podcast, I don't really know how to answer this question. We all seem to want stuff, but we don't want to pay for it. So what do we expect?
You know, I don't know. There's like no answer.
What do we expect, right? And it's like, well, I want somebody to promise me something, even if they can't give it to me.
Okay.
Right? I think that's kind of what it is. It's like, please just tell me it'll be okay, even if it's not. I just would like to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's unpack this a little bit today. I fall squarely in the Gen X category.
Yes.
Okay? This is the we don't care generation, by the way.
Right.
I mean, like, this is kind of the your feelings are irrelevant to us, whatever. right? And that's probably the best description. It's the whatever generation. Mm-hmm. Okay. Slightly older and dealing with a different set of problems, baby boomers. Maybe we start there, right?
Yeah, let's start there.
So baby boomers, what do you think is probably the number one financial challenge that baby boomers have to tackle on a day-to-day?
Well, most of them, I would say, are retired. And it's a majority of them are, one, trying not to outlive their savings.
Yeah.
And trying to just navigate retirement, what to do.
Like actually being retired.
Actually being retired.
Yeah. So, and that's, it's interesting because I think the entitlement system is probably a biggie to navigate for boomers too, depending on where you're at. If you have an adequate nest egg, then the entitlement system is just this thing in your life.
Right.
If you're on the bubble,
mm-hmm.
then the entitlement system is what is your lifeline.
Yeah.
Right. If you're below the bubble, oh, you're not really retired.
Yeah.
You know, and it's and like bummer. And so that's tough because you're like, man, how long can I get my health to hold out? Because
right.
I really can't afford to stop. And I think that does get harder as mm-hmm. we age. Just the jobs that you're suited to change and evolve with you, right?
Yeah, extremely.
But there's kind of a weird thing that's not talked about. Like here, let's see if you can. If you continue to work, retirement gets easier and easier.
Right.
Right? There's a dirty secret to this, though, right? Like, why is that, Justin?
Well, because you always have an income stream.
Okay.
If you're still working.
Yep.
Which, I mean, some people will believe continue working because it increases your longevity.
Just yeah.
body in motion, staying in motion.
Sure.
That would be the big one.
Yeah. Well, here's the dirty math secret, right? This is the equivalent of like, well, duh, right? If you don't retire, then your money stays growing longer and you need it for less time.
Yeah.
Right? Because not retiring doesn't typically extend your life's actuarially.
Right.
I mean, maybe it does because you said, you know, body in motion stays in motion. So maybe your health outcomes are better and so you last longer. But
your time horizon shrinks.
Exactly. Like the amount of time the nest egg has to sustain you shrinks.
The difference between a 30-year nest egg and a 20-year nest egg is a lot.
Well, right. And so like, well, and the difference between, hey, if I retire at 70, my money has to last until 85 is different than retiring at 60 mm-hmm. and having my money last to 85, right? Or however long you make it, right? I mean, we're just throwing out examples here. But yeah, I think that that's a biggie is how do you stay retired,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how do you navigate the system? We talk about this a lot in our office, by the way, that, you know, one of the challenges with like Social Security, for example, we have to deal with it for customers all the time. You get to deal with it that one time.
Right.
Right. Like when it's time, you deal with it. You have to become an expert for that one time
mm-hmm.
and then cross the goal line yep. and move on where we're going to see it a lot more often. It just gives you more, as they say, the more at-bats you get, the better a hitter you should become.
Yeah.
Right. You should. So, anyway. All right. So, if that's Gen X, or I'm sorry, if that's the baby boomers, what do you think is the number one financial problem that Gen X is trying to tackle?
Retirement readiness.
Okay.
Pretty much. Being prepared for retirement.
Yeah.
And then the other was kind of, you have aging parents that you're also kind of taking care of, and a lot of them have kids that they're still taking care of.
And that's really the same problem. It just doesn't sound like it at first, right?
Right.
How can you retire when both your kids and your parents simultaneously are relying upon you? It's like, well, what's left for you?
Right.
What retirement? Everybody's asking of something from me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I think is a real toughie. Gen X is sometimes referred to as the sandwich generation.
Yep.
Right. But not because everybody wants a sandwich, although not going to lie, like I do love a good sandwich. Right. But it's because if you're sandwiched between both aging parents and kids that haven't left the nest.
Right.
Right. This, by the way, plays right into the Portland problem that we talked about. Like what's the biggest
the housing
problem in
Oregon? Issue?
Affordable
yeah.
housing. What ends up keeping kids at home longer? Oftentimes
expensive housing.
Expensive housing. Right. And so we're seeing housing start to, out of necessity, become multi-generational.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a new thing for American culture. It's not a new thing for all cultures. There are a lot of cultures that have multi-generational households that are more common.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we see a lot more of that in Asian and Hispanic cultures. Can you even say that anymore? Like, can you use the terms Asian and Hispanic without somebody finding a way to be offended?
I don't know. I'm glad you did, not me, because it made it easier.
I'm just like, I don't know, man. Well, again, but that's Gen X. Don't care.
Right.
Don't care. Right. Like, you could just pound sand. Don't care. So if you got offended by that one, suck it up and, you know, I don't know, have a lollipop or something. So that was the stupidest comment I've ever made on the radio.
Yeah, it was very good.
No.
Well, and interesting with Gen X is most of them grew up without internet at all.
Right.
Until they're, you know, young adults.
I was college before I really got exposed to the internet and like a working web browser.
And so they're, you know, they're really a generation that didn't grow up with it, but the last, you know, set of kids that really didn't grow up with it.
Yeah. Gen X is a weird one, too. I'm biased on this one, but I find Gen X as a group to be really good problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's because it was the generation that had to program the VCR for their parents, but also has to fix the Wi-Fi for their kids.
Right.
And it's goofy to me how, like, my own kids sometimes are like, they'll present me with technology I've never seen before. They can't figure it out, but I can.
Right.
And they just say, well, you know, that's because you're dad, right? And it's fun to have that sort of affirmation. But no, it's because everybody designed the system to operate somehow. And
right.
So, you know, if you can kind of crack into the code, you figure it out. I don't know. But it does make for an interesting generational dynamic, right? So those, but that doesn't sound super different. Retirement, like either being retired or getting ready to retire for Gen X. Okay. So we've got, there are others out there that we ought to talk about because, you know, the goal here is we want to identify what the problems are, but I think there's probably a lot, there's some common fixes too.
There's a lot, yeah. And there's a lot of crossover problems.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like these are, this just said this is the biggie. Right. There's others, right? Like, it's complicated, but this is anyway. So look, let's do this. I want to talk a little bit about Gen Y, right? Which is younger than Gen X, but we got to take a break real quick. So we will do that when we come back. Justin, are you Generation Y?
No, nope. I'm millennial.
There's a difference? Oh, we'll have to talk about that too. Yeah. Stick around, we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brugman.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Exactly. No, Hey, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Justin Brugman.
Hey, you're just joining us. Just grab the podcast to get caught up. We're talking about the generation, the challenge, financial challenges of each generation, and we're learning as we go. Just so you're aware, I am a Gen Xer. Okay. So somewhere between the ages of 44 and 59 is where I land. Gen X is apparently 1965 to 1980 birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
And from 81 to 96 is this is another one, right?
Gen
this
Y slash millennial.
Gen Y or millennials, right? No. Justin at the break, he's like, No, we got to talk about the millennials separate. And he's like, what about Gen Y? And a guy like, wait, aren't they the same? And he goes, what? Like, yeah. No.
Learn on the show.
He's like, I'm a millennial. I'm saying, isn't that the same thing as Gen Y? Yes, actually it is, which is great because then we say, hey, Justin, are you a millennial? And you can go, why?
Yeah, why? Well, I'm just claiming Gen Y from now on.
Oh, they're that's be like, not what? Fair. Gen Y gets a bad rap, right?
No.
Gen Y is, first of all, when we try to label people by generation, let's skip this, right? There are Gen Xers that suck.
Yeah.
The same way that there are millennials that suck.
Yep.
Right? I mean, there's just lousy folks out there, but then there's also awesome folks of every generation, right? So, like, we try to, lumping people together in this sort of tribal identity is foolish.
It is really funny when somebody fits a generation like to a T, though. You're just like, you don't even have to guess.
Like, you're just like, you're a walking stereotype. Look at you go. Yeah. So let's start with Justin. I mean, what do you think? I'm not making you the ambassador for Generation Y millennials. That's not what I'm doing. But since you're there, what do you think is probably the biggest financial issue to contend with for this generation?
Home purchase, I guess, would probably be one of the biggest ones, especially that's more of a, it's harder now than it was, five years ago.
It's way harder. When you say generationally, that's true. You look 40 years ago and home prices were like 3 times annual income. Today they're like 7.
Right.
Come on. The ratios are ridiculous how much it costs.
And raising kids, and usually would be younger kids, and then also taking care of parents.
Mm-hmm. So, there's some of that depending on the scenario.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a fascinating one. Here's what ChatGPT had to say about this one. It was student loan debt.
Yeah.
That's a big
one. That's a big one.
That intuitively makes sense to me, considering how many millennials are now kind of in the sweet spot as a voting block, and how you see politicians speaking to student loans so frequently.
Yes.
Right? It's I know that's a jaded thing to say about it, but it's absolutely real. It's like, pick the topic that you're going to, that someone's going to be sensitive to and appeal to it.
And there's a lot of
There's a lot. Well, and I'm, at the risk of sounding like I'm throwing rocks at education, and I'm not throwing rocks at education. What I'm going to throw rocks at is a lot of bad policy, or I will even say a lack of goodwill at times in higher education specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's a different set of challenges at like K through 12. Right?
Yes.
I think it's a different set of circumstances in even the community college level, right? And maybe that's just because that's where I'm at. But I see the cost of universities and how much they've gone up, and the way the pricing is way above normal cost of living or inflation,
right,
or any other standard. It's like it's got its own scale that's exponential. And so, I scrutinize this because I think that millennials were lied to.
Yeah.
Maybe not on purpose, right? Because what were you told, right?
Go to college and set yourself up for life.
Yep.
That pretty much was the scenario.
That was the scenario. I don't think that there was a guidance counselor in the country that said that thinking that they were going to be saddling people with unreasonable debt and minimal additional opportunity set.
Right.
Like, I just don't think that was ever the intent. I don't think most universities looked at it and said, let's figure out how much we can possibly charge a student.
Yeah.
I think what happened is a lot of universities said, look at our cost of operating and look at what our wage requirements are through the unionization process,
mm-hmm,
and where we have gone to. Look at the ratios that we want to maintain of staff and administration and so forth. And then all of that overhead continued to bloat.
Yeah.
And they needed to find a way to pay for it.
And therefore charge more.
Yeah. Well, and once the federal financial aid process got involved, there's a pernicious incentive to say, well, if the feds will loan people the money, they'll have the access to fund us, so we can kind of set our pricing wherever we need to, and then if they make an expected family contribution part of the equation for financial aid, then the families that have more essentially have a progressive tax on university education.
Right.
But the same parents that were sending their kids were also told, send your kids to school, you'll set them up for life.
Right.
And then you look at the result and go, wait a second here. We were told this would happen and this would be the outcome. What's the actual outcome?
Right.
Bunch of debt.
Yeah.
Right? And people that have degrees that may not be terribly useful.
Yes. I mean, it definitely opens doors.
Can.
It can. I mean, our profession.
Well, there are professions that you need. There's base level qualification to get in. Right? So it can be a barrier to entry.
Which, and I feel like it's more even, it's a commitment thing. If somebody commits to 4 years to something, they're probably going to commit to the workplace too. So there's probably a different. It's a big recruiting element as well.
Yeah. Let me out for like unsolicited advice to all of our listeners. If you've got kids or grandkids in particular and they ever hear this, you know, one of the things, this isn't originally from me. I stole it from somebody else, but I don't care. I'm not even going to give them credit either. I'm just going to say it. One of the things about a liberal arts education in particular, but a college degree in general, is it is extraordinarily difficult to make it through college without learning to write. The problem with modern day large language models and AI is that people are learning ways to cheat around that.
Right.
But you're cheating yourself learning how to think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you let AI be the intelligence factor,
right,
then you have nothing, very little to do with it. Right. Which puts you in a dangerous position of being only as valuable as the AI makes you.
Yeah. And whatever the AI tells you.
Right.
Because how you word questions can vastly change.
Oh, 100%.
What's going to spit back out.
Yeah, and just the ability to look at something critically and determine, hey, does that pass the sniff
test? The sniff test, yeah.
And so learning to write as part of a university education trains you to think and trains you for how to learn and solve problems, right? And so I think there's a tremendous value in that, that as an employer, I like to see that somebody has that capability.
Right.
So there's some assumed validation in the process. Unfortunately, it seems to be getting diluted because of, again, what I will say is somewhat bad faith in certain niches. I don't think most professors are trying to sneak a fast one by their students. I don't think that's the.
No.
I don't think it's a malicious intent. I just think it's that. There's still a big finance, you know, follow the money.
Yeah.
I hate it. It's not a conspiracy, though. It's just how it works. Follow the money. Everywhere you go, like, what, you know, when we joked around and said, what's the number one financial problem for Congress, right? They spend more than they bring in.
They spend too much money.
Right? Well, what's the number one problem that all of us are going to struggle with?
Spend too much
money. Spend more than we bring
right.
in. Right. And so we make a whole career out of helping people to save and build assets.
And it's even as you go back through these generations, it's the same issues. You're just experiencing them in a different stage of your life.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, baby boomers aren't typically buying houses right now unless it's.
Yeah, I mean, like if it's a vacation home, it's because they've got enough.
Right.
It's sometimes downsizing, though.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Or baby boomers may be assessing, are we at a point where we would consider selling a primary residence and transitioning into some kind of senior living environment,
right,
which is a continuum of care? And again, I mean, baby boomers still, there's a spectrum. And so, like, you could be in your 80s, you could be in your 60s as a baby boomer. And so if you're in your 60s, you're like, well, I got a lot of gas in the tank.
Right.
Like, yeah, you do. But if you're, you know, in your, you know, 80s, you're like, I got less gas in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, that's fair. So, yeah. But you're right. I mean, the problem is usually a matter of balancing resources.
Right.
Okay. I just think it's getting harder for the younger generation because we have, like, things are proportionally more expensive and wages haven't caught, like, been able to keep up.
Right.
And this is not today. Today's show is not about, like, why haven't they kept up? That's maybe a separate show. We have that conversation.
Yeah, maybe.
But it is, like, just acknowledging, like, hey, don't go tell this young generation. You just need to go work harder.
Right.
That's not the right message. I think the right message is you need to find ways to deliver value in a way that you can capture some of it.
Right.
Okay. Think about what that means, right? It's not just going somewhere and showing up and saying, well, my time is valuable because it's me, right?
Right.
And I want a trophy too, right? Like that, everybody's going to mock you for that. Remember, Gen X, we don't care. Like, just whatever, we don't care. But you show up to work, and like I tell this to Justin all the time. He shows up, and our company is more valuable, and we deliver better for our customers
right.
because of what he brings to the table. And it's easy to reward him for being a valuable team member. He makes me better. He makes Matt better. He makes our, you know, it helps with our clients. So, like, that's adding value. It's different than like,
right.
just being there and occupying space during time.
And it still has to do with the habits that you have starting younger. I mean, the issues of the money issue seems to be more on the younger generational side, because the boomers went through a time where there was not a lot of anything. And so they saved. They were good savers. They've always been good savers. And then it just didn't necessarily translate back down to generations. And now it's harder to catch up just because of the economic cycles that we're in. Yeah. Everything's just more expensive.
Well, you know, I'm going to take – let me take the other side of the coin for a moment here. I don't disagree with you. I mean, boomers had – but what boomers were also at the helm of a lot of escalation in cost.
Right.
Right. I mean, boomers have been driving government now for a long time.
Right.
And you can tell because they're still there.
Yes.
Right? A bunch of boomers that are in their, you know, in their 80s now. Or maybe they're the tail end of the greatest generation even, whatever it is. You have a bunch of octogenarians that are still actively sort of hoarding mm-hmm. and managing political power in our high levels of government. And they're not releasing that. And you tell me. Why is it that the four richest counties, my understanding is the four richest counties in the country, all border Washington, D.C.? And where do all the lobbyists live?
Washington, D.C.
Well, or in those counties.
Yeah.
Because that's where they go to is Washington, mm-hmm. D.C., right? And so it's back to that follow the money thing is just if you keep doing that long enough, the system will become bureaucratic and bloat.
Right.
I'm not offering a solve, but I am acknowledging that those at the helm do get some of the accountability of the decisions and the outcomes.
Right.
So we have, through our fiscal and monetary policy, arrived at a point where this is what it looks like. And the promise of the American dream looks a lot more distant for our young folks in this mm-hmm. economy. So, I'm just going to say it. I'm not here to sugarcoat it. All right. There are others that are going to have challenges to deal with. We're going to talk about them. Even Gen Z mm-hmm. is in there.
Yep.
But I'm looking at the clock. We better grab a break real quick. So we will do that when we come back. We'll cover Gen Z. But then we're going to start talking about if there are common challenges, what are some of the common solves? We got that and more when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brugman.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Because, I mean, that's actually a great question, right? Like, what is more valuable, Bitcoin or ChatGPT? So, all right, sorry. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to True Wealth. This is Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Justin Brugman.
And we are talking about the number one financial problem kind of by generation. Is it fair? Absolutely not. Are we doing it anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, pound sand. We can do what we want. It's our show. Except for the parts that the FCC says you can't say. So we'll keep it clean, Justin. I've been warning you about that over there.
Yep.
I was watching you. Hey, I really feel like I should lean on you for this one because I'm officially getting too old.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
How do we talk about Gen Z and like this is a different breed. Certainly than Gen X, right?
Mm-hmm.
These guys are all about the internet. It's yep. all digital. It's all everything. I mean, like, you're talking crypto, gig economy, it's YOLO, all of this.
Yep. And the side hustle.
The side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of what the gig economy to me. I mean, is that
yeah,
the same thing?
That would be the same
is
thing.
Is the same
yeah.
thing? Yeah. I mean.
I think.
Well, you know, I don't. I'm going to pull this data out of a hat. Somebody can fact check me on it because really you should, right? But it seems like it used to be that the average person, it was not uncommon to have like 30 years at the same company, retire with a pension and a gold watch.
Right.
Right. Today, the average worker will have something like 14 different stints of employment that are material.
Right. Wow.
14 different jobs. I mean, I'm like, maybe that number is wrong. I haven't actually fact checked at all, but it's not the same world.
It wouldn't surprise me.
No, me neither.
At all.
You know, if you look at a 30-year career, though, it's like a 2-year stint.
Gee.
Right? I mean, it's probably a little longer than that, but let's say you work from 20 to 65, right? That's 45 years.
Right.
14, I mean, that's 3 years, 3 years and jump. And I know industries where that's how you advance. Right?
Switch companies.
I'll just straight up pick on it. Because you guys don't like this, guess what? Change it. That's how bankers get
banking,
promoted.
Yeah, that would have been my guess.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, lender got a packet, you know, got their contract agreement. They work for a little while. They build up a portfolio. Bank says, now we're happy paying you what we're paying you. Some other bank says, come over here. We'll pay you more. Bring your clients.
Right.
And so they do. And then 3 years later, it happens all over again. They may go right back to the place they left. And that's how you get raises.
Yeah. Interesting concept.
Right? Feels like a really expensive way to turn people over in the system. Like, really? Get all that institutional memory and goodwill and squander it? Why would you do that?
I feel like there's a better solve to that problem.
Yeah, well, I remember I'm Gen X here, like, whatever. That's how you want to do it. You guys go do you. That's fine. So what is Gen X, what is Gen Z, these young folks here, and we're now talking about, they are born
97
on,
yep.
Right? Or there's actually like 97 to 2010 or 2014, something like that. So for that block, what are some of the things that Gen Z is tackling? I mean, it definitely doesn't look like my childhood. We didn't have Facebook and social tracking us everywhere and Alexa and all that shenanigans.
And they grew up with 100% technology from birth.
Yeah, digital natives. Yeah. No immigration from an analog to digital system. Straight up born in it.
Mm-hmm. And then the cryptocurrency was still.
Still is, yeah. I heard something about how Gen Z in particular and younger they're kind of adopting the concept of just decentralized currency in general. There's a certain amount of, you know, the government can't be trusted, and so the digital currency is the only way to escape that.
Okay.
I disagree.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I disagree, but that's not the topic of today's show. So they're staring at a world that's more expensive, jobs that don't look the same, education that may or may not represent the same value that it used to. I mean, I think education is always valuable, but like delivery of education is looking different. You know, how many people can go and just through YouTube University learn comprehensive skill set?
A lot, probably.
Yeah. I was reading, I think that MIT has their computer science degree online.
You can
audit the computer science degree at MIT, I believe, if you just wanted to take the courses. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case.
That's wild.
Yeah. Oh, it's one of my favorite things about UCC. I'm just going to, like, for a minute, promote. Yeah, I get to do this. I'm on the board. I get to do this. What I love about our local community college here is that they're taking the position that education needs to be affordable and accessible. And so one of the active steps they're doing, I don't remember the exact name of the program, it's got an acronym or something, but essentially trying to create textbooks and things that don't require you buy physical books. They're available online. You can put them on a tablet or a laptop. And so you can get your text that way through sort of an open source environment where you're saving a tremendous amount of money on the books. I mean,
I remember how expensive those were. They were crazy.
I'm old enough to remember when the teacher was the one that wrote the book and you had to buy it to take the class. So, yeah. Anyway, whole different set of challenges, but the biggie is, like, you know, not everybody's going to end up being a social media influencer.
Right.
Right? Like, you're just going to have to maybe give up on the idea that that's your calling.
Yeah. I want to say that they want to get the dollar as fast as possible.
Yeah.
But that's a weird way of saying it without saying, like, they don't want to work. They do want to work for it. It looks different than how we typically see work.
Yeah.
It's behind a screen or you know, creating and posts and things like that, or videos.
I might be unfair when I say this too. It looks more mercenary to me, right? It's less about build something with a team that creates value and it is just saying this is sort of a transactional way to get money.
Right.
But again, that could be really inaccurate, mm-hmm. because a lot of what I see is probably from influencers and folks that make right. that look like it's the case. And so that may be really wrong.
It's exactly what they're trying to do.
So I just want to leave out there that option. That here's my big experience with people, right? I think that most of us, even though we have different ages and different stressors and different unique circumstances, I think a lot of folks have a lot of things that are similar,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, like, we all have some basic food safety shelter needs, and then there's a certain amount of desire for, you know, fulfillment and the ability to do some of the things that you want to do, where you don't feel like you're trapped in doing something, because that's pretty demoralizing. What we want is, you know, we don't all need to be super wealthy, but we'd like to have enough discretion to take a vacation or two,
right?
And to, you know, not feel like you don't have any kind of security. So those are pretty basic. So here's the real question. If all these generations have different problems, do they all have different solutions?
Probably not.
Yeah.
They're probably similar solutions to
I think the biggest thing is you have different amounts of time.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with investing, which is we talk about money all the time about this. You know, there's a number of problems, but they always come down to some basics, right? Spend less than you make.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to have enough in reserve that if something unanticipated occurs, you have the ability to adapt.
Right.
Okay. And then it's about knowing what what you're looking for on the horizon and pointing in that direction with intention.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, those are probably the biggest things. Everything else is sort of, how do you fulfill on that strategy?
Right.
Right. It turns out if you're listening to this show and you're 18 and you found the podcast somehow or other, and this was kind of relevant for whatever reason, you're hearing this and you're going, yeah, well, I want to make $1 billion. Like, I'm not going to tell you that's impossible, right? What I'm going to tell you is it's going to require probably a lot more than a fluke.
Yeah.
It's going to require significant and intentional decision-making and activity. It's going to require a significant amount of risk.
Yes.
Like, that just happens. Like, none of this happens without risk. It comes with a significant probability of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The first million's the hardest.
Yeah. Well, there's even a number reason for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, it's hard to get enough capital to have enough capital to start working, because your life is busy cannibalizing all of your discretionary, right? So, you know, it turns out if you make just enough money to survive, it's a tough spot to be, because you feel like you can never reach escape velocity.
Right.
So maybe that's the question that we ask for everybody here is, like, maybe why don't we do this? I think that there's kind of a simple thing that we can direct for, but we'll still do it by generation. And then we look at it and see what they have in common.
Okay.
All right. But as I look at the clock, I think we do need to take our last corporate profit break. So why don't we do that? When we come back, we're going to figure out, like, by generation, what can you do? And we'll say, what's the solve? Let's remember that. What's the solve for the number one financial problem? That and more. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brugman.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the home stretch. Dave Littlejohn in studio today, joined by
Justin Brugman.
All right, Justin, we said we're going to bring it home for our listeners. We got 5 or 6 more minutes here to try to shake this all out. we've all every generation has its own version of financial problem or challenge or whatever it is.
Right.
How do we solve this? Let's start with, if you could, talking about baby boomers who are typically in retirement and their challenge is navigating retirement. What do you think is the number one thing that they ought to be trying to do to improve the best, to get the best outcome possible?
You mean other than come see us?
That's actually the whole answer. And that's our show.
And we're
thanks,
done.
Guys.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. It actually one of the answers is, you know, consider working with a financial
right.
professional. But
well,
yeah.
It's get educated.
Okay.
And, you know, asking the right questions, and the technology is there to be able to ask those questions.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways to solve or
right.
find that trusted advocate and ask
right.
lots of questions to them.
Exactly. Because it may turn out that the stresses that even, especially, you know, if they're already retired, is it might not be as bad as they think it is.
Yeah.
Or it's worse. And then
yeah.
it's like, all
yeah,
right,
yeah,
then we got to pivot here.
So here would be an interesting one. I'm curious what you think about this, right? I might suggest not only the financial education, but that it may be as important to find a financial planner as what would traditionally be somebody that's kind of selling investment solutions.
Right.
I think as boomers, you probably have made a lot of your investments. Now the goal is like, it's not about getting rich, it's about keeping away from becoming poor.
Right.
But a lot of that becomes financial literacy and improved decision making, mistake avoidance. And I think that's where planning and doing intentional things with your money can really make
yeah.
an impact. So that's where I would start with Gen X. With baby boomers. What about Gen X? What would you suggest to them?
That's almost going to be the same.
Right. So hire
it's
us.
The same.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Hire
good.
Us. That's
yeah.
perfect. That's
okay.
It. But that, I mean, that date range, you know, that probably fit, 10 to 20 years from retirement,
I think,
I guess,
44
would be.
To 59 right now is that block. So they're
yeah, so 20
six
years
to
out.
10 years for the beginning of that to 20 years out, yeah.
And it would probably be more is if it's the retirement is the concern, is just making sure you are on the path and what path you want to be on.
Yeah.
Because there's no one size fits all.
Right. I do think it's pretty consistent that, you know, you need to start intentionally funding the mechanisms that will give you the nest egg to retire with,
right?
And let's keep in mind, retirement by definition, we'll use the definition of probably, it doesn't have to be fully FIRE, which if you've heard of this is financial independence, retire early. It's more like FIR, financial independence to retire. Financial
right.
independence is your assets are capable of sustaining you, so you're not working any longer.
Right.
You want to keep working, great, but we want to get enough income sources and nest egg resources that you can replace your income so you no longer have to work.
And or at least a portion of your income.
Well, if you're replacing a portion, yeah, yeah. Because my thought is, look, if I've got a nest egg, I can spend that down.
Right.
And then I can factor in Social Security pensions and other, you know, rental properties and so forth that
right.
can provide income. So there you go. Okay, for millennials, what are we looking at?
Just hang on.
Yeah. I think the millennial game here is you need to start actively accumulating assets, whether
mm-hmm.
it's through retirement accounts or even through just building up resources so that you have the ability to access other things like the real estate market, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be intentional about it, and you're going to have to be creative about I think sometimes you're going to have to defer some gratification that's really unpopular because
yeah.
the millennial generation kind of created YOLO.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I get it. But YOLO is also a really good way to excuse bad financial behaviors and pretend later like you're a victim.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're going to have to own some of the outcomes of your decisions. I say that for everybody, by the way. And remember, we've already acknowledged it's getting harder.
Right.
Like life is more expensive. So I'm not insensitive to where you're at. I'm just saying, you know, when forced with the decision of like, great, it's a really miserable circumstance. Are you going to like quit? Or are you going to say, yeah, it's miserable, it's harder, but I can still do this?
Yeah.
Because I believe in you. You can.
And I think it's even, too, is at that age, is educating your kids on the habits,
yeah.
too, to create not that we weren't educated on those habits, but we're living through those habits in a time where even if you had adequate savings or even if you're spending, you know, in a range, you're at the peak of that range probably right now, just with the cost.
Yeah.
And so having that embedded into you earlier makes the process a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple things I would also say, and this is to all generations. So for our Gen Zers, this is about getting educated early so you can make fewer mistakes early. And that, the, you know, the longer you have, the better this gets, the easier it is with more time horizon.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple of key things. One piece of advice I would say is start families. I know that sounds crazy, right? But you do not want a declining population. That's economically challenging.
Right.
And so I really want to encourage that. But I'm also going to just tell you, there's never the right time to start families. And do it the right way. I'm not suggesting go out there and be clumsy and unintentional. I'm just saying that there's never going to be a perfect time. So don't be scared of that. The resources find a way when you're motivated.
There'll be navigations no matter when it happens.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then the other is, I really want to encourage this next generation to step into leadership roles.
Right.
Right. You can't complain that the world is run by a bunch of octogenarians, but then not step into the role and say, but I'm ready for my turn.
Right.
We have so many folks that I know that you get picked on. Like if you're a millennial out there, you get picked on mm-hmm. a lot. But look, there's a lot of really smart, talented, hardworking folks that are capable of leading. And I would love to see this as a generation kind of rise up and take mm-hmm. that leadership mantle and do great things with it. Yeah. So that's kind of my like encouragement to you guys is system's hard, but you can do it. Right. And if we can help, you know, we're at the end of the show. So this is our shameless plug time. Justin, what's our phone number?
541-375-0898.
Good job. You get to keep it. All right. I love it. Also, you can always send an email to us at info@littlejohnfs.com. That'll go to the team and we'll get you to the right spot. You can also text our number if you want to give us a text and reach out. But until next time, we are out of time. So thanks for tuning in as always. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brugman.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.